The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
For my birthday a couple months ago, Diana got me a beautiful set of kitchen knives and a cooking class. Like a knife skills class. And I got to go take that the other night. Finally, after months, it happened. And it was really cool. It was great. We did a Mediterranean feast.
Yum.
Learned a little. It was a very beginner's class. And, you know, I've been cooking for a while. But there was a couple new things I learned. And it was also really nice to go in and have somebody teaching you and sort of be like, oh, good, I've been doing that right.
Right? That you know? Is a nice thing.
Yeah.
I did hope that it would be some like dope chef knife ninja skills, but I guess I should have expected more because it's definitely for like couples to take.
I did.
You know, I couldn't go with you. So you're all alone.
It was just me and 10 couples.
You're looking like a real loser in there. Be like, I'm professionally married, actually. So
right. I frequently, as often as I could, said, well, my wife doesn't.
They're all like. She lives in Niagara.
Yeah. My wife, you wouldn't know her.
Yeah.
She's very
pretty.
No
one would.
She's beautiful, but she never leaves the house in Canada. That was really good. It was really good food. I did learn some seasoning tricks. And, I learned what to do with an extra bulb of garlic. You just throw it in the oven. You just cook it until it's soft and you just squeeze it out like a paste. And then you just can put that on some bread or whatever.
I'm in.
Yeah.
I know if you roast garlic, it's kind of sweet. Like, it's not it doesn't give you the kick that garlic does when you cook it in a dish or on a pan or whatever.
Another thing I learned, they said the more you cut garlic, the more spicy and garlicky it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so if you really want to get a lot of flavor out of your garlic, chop it very fine. And if you just want to keep it kind of mild, you know, just slice it a few times. And then you just bake the whole thing like that. You roast those cloves whole and they come out almost sweet.
Yeah, I couldn't go because I was in Orlando. They have their winter mini fringe festival in January. So I got to go to that for just a couple days and see a few shows. And
couple
our
days,
submissions
nothing.
Are open.
You were there for like,
I know, like
18
24 hours.
Yeah.
We drove in. We saw 2 shows. We fell asleep. We woke up. We saw 2 shows and we drove home.
That's how we roll over here.
It was crazy, but it was worth it. It was really great to go.
Well, speaking of theater, speaking of weddings, speaking of Canadians, all the things we've mentioned.
All the things we've mentioned.
In the last 10
That's
minutes.
That's true.
we've got a brand new episode today. I didn't think this was going to happen, but in doing the research for our last episode, I just came up with pages and pages of other things to talk about around Jeopardy. Because, you know, last week we learned about Merv and Julanne Griffin. They were the TV power couple who created Jeopardy, which is, of course, one of the most popular game shows in the world. I really thought that was going to be all the ridiculous romance that we got out of it. Because, I mean, it's a fast-paced quiz show where contestants just spit out rapid-fire questions. They're all trying to out-trivia themselves for big prizes. So I didn't think there'd be a lot of romance involved. But somehow, several people actually had their buzzers pressed by their opponents. Sparks went flying after the final Jeopardy answer was questioned.
In more ways than one.
Uh-huh. And we're going to get to know some of their stories today. But first, honestly, we've just got to hear all about the super sweet romance between one of the world's best TV hosts, Alex Trebek, and his beloved wife, Jean.
Let's do it.
Hey there, friends, come listen well. Eli and Diana got some stories to tell. There's no matchmaking or romantic tips. It's just about ridiculous relationships. A lover might be any type of person at all, an abstract concept or a concrete wall. But if there's a story worth a second glance, we'll put it in our show, Ridiculous Romance.
A production of iHeartRadio.
All right, so to me, Alex Trebek is like right up there with Mr. Rogers, Dolly Parton, Bob Ross, Sherry Lewis, you know, I don't know, Keanu Reeves, you know, Brendan Fraser, just these people that you look at and you're like, you're just a kind person and you want goodness in this world.
A sweet angel.
Yeah. And like in doing research about him, it's really interesting to find that he is very different from his Jeopardy persona, but also
a real piece of shit.
No, no, it seems like this is very true, too. It's an interesting contrast. Yeah, and now we're going to expose Alex Trebek for the monster he is. No. No, Alex Trebek was born in 1940 in Ontario, Canada. His father was actually born in Ukraine, and his last name was originally Terebichuk.
Oh, Terebichuk.
But we learned in Pam Pollock's book, Who Was Alex Trebek, that his father changed it after he moved to Canada so it was easier for English speakers to pronounce.
Tale as old as time.
Alex Trebek's mother was Lucille Lagasse.
Oh.
Okay. But come on, wouldn't it be cool if it was Lucille Ball? Like, wouldn't that blow everybody's mind?
I don't know. I'd be like, Alex Trebek was a nepo baby.
As a child, Alex Trebek was very protective of his younger sisters. And one time when he was just 7 years old, he saw his little five-year-old sister playing out on a frozen lake. Very common in the Northeast.
Canada, yeah.
Now, he ran over. He stopped her. He said, no, you can't go out there. It's dangerous. You shouldn't be playing on a lake unless you absolutely know it's completely frozen. So he did that thing where he was like, you know, to show you how dangerous this is, I'm going to go test the lake. And this seven-year-old Alex Trebek walks out on this frozen lake. And of course, the ice creaked and cracked and he fell straight through into the frozen river.
Oh, my God.
It was only because a rail worker happened to be passing by and saw him and pulled him out of the water that Alex was saved.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy. There's got to be a better way. Like, can you not throw a cement block or something?
Well, but then you would break it.
I mean,
weaken the integrity, right?
I guess so. I feel that they should have come up with a better way. That's all I'm saying.
After
all this time
is.
Dealing with frozen lakes, there's got to be some
method. Way that just a seven-year-old didn't know.
Okay, fair enough. He's seven. He doesn't know the best way to do everything. Moving on. Alex Trebek grew up in a French-English bilingual household, and he went to both French and English-speaking schools, and he went to a prep school starting in ninth grade. Jealous of that. I wish I grew up in a bilingual household because no chance I'm going to learn it now. But the same year that he went to prep school, Alex's parents divorced and his mother moved to Detroit, Michigan to be near her sisters. And Alex started acting out. You know, that's common with children of divorce. Yep. His grades suffered. At the end of the semester, the prep school told him not to come back next year.
Wow.
Which is a pretty rude thing for a prep school to say, but right. I guess you got to keep your grades to a certain level, a certain standard. So they were like, get out of here, Alex.
Yeah, we're preparing you for,
right.
you know, what happens when you don't show up.
And you're not prepared.
Yeah.
So his dad drove out to the school and begged them to let Alex stay. So he did get another chance. But from then on, he had to be sure to be like an exemplary student. And he excelled in all his classes.
I'm trying to think of the headmaster who pulls a young Alex Trebek in and says, "You're just no good with facts, kid. You just can't learn things. You know, we teach you stuff, we ask you questions, and you don't have the answers, Alex Trebek."
He's like, "One day I'll show you.
Right.
I'll have all the answers." Now, after Alex graduated, he joined a military program that would help him pay for college, but he only lasted 3 days. Mm. That's 3 days longer than I would last. The first 2 days, he was harassed by older students who loved to haze the new recruits.
Rude.
But on day three, the final straw came when the academy told him he had to cut his hair.
Oh, no.
Trebek wrote in his memoirs, quote, "I had a good head of hair." So he's like, "Hell no." And he called his dad. He said, "I'm coming home."
Wow. Now, Alex said his dad was incredibly supportive throughout his life. He wrote that his father wasn't a well-educated man and he wasn't particularly bright, but, quote, "he was just all heart. He just poured his love out for me. It didn't matter what I did. I was never a disappointment to him."
Hmm.
Alex got his first job as a bellhop at the hotel where his dad worked as a chef. And he actually had an incredible work ethic, and he was seriously dedicated to punctuality. He's one of those guys who was like, if you're not 10 minutes early, you're late.
Right. I can just see him in a little outfit.
Oh, a little
bellhop
outfit?
Did they have to wear the little bellhop outfit at this point?
I'm going to assume, because I want to, that yes.
Yes. Okay.
Alex Trebek wearing the little bellhop uniform. Yep, yes. With that little hat.
Yes.
I going up there.
I love it. I wish he had hosted Jeopardy as a bellhop just one time to get in touch with his roots.
But look, Alex Trebek, Mr. Punctuality, doing really well in school, but he was not all goody two shoes. One of the more surprising facts about this guy, this calm, cool, collected Canadian, is that apparently Alex Trebek curses like a sailor.
What?
I can't even imagine.
Amazing. But sounds so classy. Like, his voice is so classy that
right.
I feel like if I heard him say a curse word, I would just laugh. But I don't, maybe you'd be really scared. I don't know. Some shit's going down.
Your family grew up with some cursing, right?
Oh, yeah.
Mine didn't. Like, when I was a kid, like, no one in my family cursed, so it was weird to hear my parents curse when I did.
I don't know what changed, because we definitely weren't cursing for a long time.
Yeah.
And then it was like my brother was, like, feeling himself at whatever age boys do, and they're yeah. like, "I'm going to start, you know," because we loved action movies, so we would watch, like, Lethal Weapon, you know, whatever, whatever. So you would just say whatever, quote.
Yeah.
And, of course, it makes people laugh when a kid curses.
Oh, my God.
So you keep doing it because you want to make people laugh.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think it was more about that. But
yeah,
now
sure.
now we all curse. So
yeah.
I don't know what happened. We were a bad influence on our parents or something. Because they used to care, but now they don't care.
Right.
They're over it.
Well, Alex Trebek said that, you know, he was too good about everything else. He needed something different. He didn't smoke or drink or do any drugs or anything. So he needed a vice. To make himself stand out, feel
sure.
like one of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
He said, quote, "I started saying s***, f***ing c*** words so b***s eating s***s buckets could eat his f***ing a***hole."
Mr. Trebek! Okay.
That's not a real quote. That's just what I like to imagine that he sounded like. In reality, he did say that he did need this vice, but, quote, "it didn't help me become one of the guys. It really just made me look like a jerk."
All right, fair enough.
Just fair.
Well, he took his work seriously, and in 1961, he was studying at the University of Ottawa during the day and working at the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation at night. He took every gig to come his way and eventually ended up reading the CBC National Radio News. He definitely had a good radio news voice.
Oh, yeah.
In 1966, he hosted his first quiz show, a game for high schoolers called Reach for the Top. He hosted classical music programs on the radio. He hosted sports games like curling, horse racing, and skating.
Oh.
So the classy sports. He was
right.
not like calling the football game.
Well, the Canadian sports.
The Canadian sports. He even did his own morning radio DJ show in the early 70s. That's when the cursing came in handy.
Yeah, right.
And in 1974, Alex Trebek found a woman he would soon call his wife. Her name was Elaine Howard of Columbus, Ohio, And if you were around in the 1960s, you might know her better by her pseudonym, Teddy Howard, which she used while working as a Playboy bunny.
Oh, okay, Alex.
Hot to trot.
Now, Elaine and her first husband, Louis Calais, moved to Toronto and they had a daughter named Nikki. While she was there, she started a party planning business and a promo agency. Obviously, this is after she stopped being a Playboy bunny. Mm-hmm. And eventually, she even got her own talk show with CHCH-TV titled Call Calais, where she would really push the boundaries by talking about sex topics. And remember, this is the late 60s, so right. Kind of a big deal.
They were like, sex? Uh-huh. That's the one word you can't say on television.
Yeah, right. On that show, she interviewed a woman named Xaviera Hollander, who was someone who had gone from working as a call girl to eventually becoming New York City's leading madam in the 1960s. Now, Hollander was arrested and forced to leave the U.S., and this is where she ended up doing this interview in Canada. Oh. So, future episode alert.
Yeah.
We got to see if we can dig up the story
a
of
leading
Xaviera
madam
Hollander.
In New York. Yeah.
I know, right? Now, we could not find this interview, but apparently it was salacious enough to get Elaine's show canceled.
Too far, Call Calais.
Uh-huh.
You've gone too far.
But trying to imagine the question she would have asked New York City's leading madam.
Oh my
you know,
God.
That would get her show canceled in the late 60s. So it might have been, you know, like, did your skirts go all the way up to your knees?
Know,
you know,
like one guy touched my foot. And they're like, ah! No, she might have named names. That's what I want to know.
Oh, damn.
I'm like, she might have said somebody's name that uh-huh. they were like, we can't tell anybody that he was visiting, you know, your brothel or whatever.
Late 60s. Oh, Trudeau's dad. Remember we did the
yes,
episode about
Pierre.
Him? Oh, no. Maybe
Pierre
that was
Trudeau.
It. Speculation Station. Xaviera Hollander spilled the beans about Pierre Trudeau, and they had to cancel Call Calais after that.
Or she's like, the wife, Mrs. Trudeau, came and met Mick Jagger.
Yeah, right. That's
place.
It. That's it.
And they were like, turn it up, pull the plug.
Well, after that show got canceled, Elaine ended up hosting a more typical morning show called Canada AM. This job was also short-lived because apparently there was quickly a mutual agreement that she was not a good fit for a typical morning show.
She's like, I don't like to get up this early. I'm really more of a late night kind of gal.
I mean, I got fired for being too outspoken on my sex talk show, so maybe I shouldn't be waking people up in the morning.
That's such a good point.
Right?
You want somebody very chill in the morning.
Uh-huh. But getting and losing this job did lead to her meeting Alex Trebek.
Now, she and Trebek got married in 1974, a year after her divorce from her first husband. Unfortunately, there's very little information about their actual marriage, except that they did not have any kids together. But Alex did adopt Elaine's daughter, Nikki, who was 6 when they got married. Their marriage lasted 7 years. They divorced amicably in 1981, and they stayed on good terms. Elaine went on to found the company Scent Seal, which created like a new system for packaging perfume samples.
Oh.
Maybe she's the reason you get those magazines
right.
with the little flap that you
yeah.
can open and smell it. Maybe
that
she came up
it.
With that because that sounds like a Scent Seal.
Right.
I don't know. Speculation Station, she invented the flappy thing. She married a TV producer named Peter Karras in 2001, and she's mostly stayed out of the spotlight. Of course, Alex Trebek did not stay out of the spotlight,
oh,
decidedly
no.
stepped into it.
Uh-huh.
A few years after their divorce, he got one of the biggest spotlights in the world. We already told y'all about the Jeopardy reboot in the last episode
right.
and how Lucille Ball encouraged Merv Griffin to hire Alex Trebek for the job. And sure enough, in 1984, he taped his first episode. In an interview with Washington Post, Lois Feinstein, a contestant from the reboot's first episode, said it took 2.5 hours to film, but Alex, quote, maintained calm through the whole thing.
That's wild.
That is great.
And for 2.5 hours for one episode, I don't remember if we mentioned this in the last episode, but normally they would shoot 5 episodes of Jeopardy per day
oh,
in, like
wow.
in like an 8-hour day. They're just back to back, boom, boom, boom.
What took so long this time?
They said it was just a lot of starts and stops, flubs. It was his first time. It was the first time bringing the show back. So they just had to get back in the groove again.
Mm.
But he didn't get frustrated. He was like, all right, let's take it again. Let's go again.
That's a good try to be Alex Trebek in my day to day.
You really do. I mean, especially You know, when you're working in television, everything is so high stakes and everything is last minute. There is, you're going to be shocked if you ever walk into a TV set and see how unprepared everything is.
Right.
Because you can't, because you don't know what's going to happen until it's happening a lot of the time. Like, all the scripts and planning in the world can't really prepare you. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of starting and stopping.
Yeah.
And something like a live game show with a studio audience and everything, I can imagine that'd be, you could get tripped up in a lot of places you wouldn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
Another contestant, Jim Topkins McLean, who competed in 1989, said that while they were shooting, a kid shouted out an answer during the gameplay. And at first, Trebek was kind of irritated about this, but then he looked over, he realized that it was a very young boy, only like 8 or 9 years old. So Trebek walked over, sat down, and just talked to this kid. And Topkins McLean said, quote, "The whole audience fell in love with Alex Trebek in that moment."
Aww.
He said, quote, "I'm a school teacher, and now that's how I scold people. I think, what would Alex Trebek do?" All these contestants talked about how Alex was so focused on them and who they were and what they did with their time. They all just felt so welcomed by him. In the early 90s, a lot of these contestants were at an age where they still remembered Art Fleming, who everybody loved as a Jeopardy host. Mm-hmm. So Alex had to really work to win them over, but he did it with like no problem at all.
I bet that's pretty important to like make them all feel comfortable, because then they can perform better.
100%.
You know, like if you made them feel really like I'm the guy, uh-huh. and, you know, people are watching for me, you probably would get a worse performance out of all the contestants. It's such like an added layer of like what's important about a game show host.
Absolutely. You know, we'll talk about this a little later in the episode, but you show up to be on Jeopardy and they film 5 episodes a day. All the contestants show up at the same time and you don't know when you're going on.
Oh, wow.
They draw names to figure out who's next right before they tape. Hmm. So you might get there at 8 a.m. and not shoot your episode till 4 and not know you're shooting your episode till 3:30.
Dang. You know?
And so you've got that on top of a lot of these people have never been on camera before. So they've got to go be TV stars for 22 minutes and remember everything they ever learned. So
<I know. laughs>
they're probably very stressed out.
And meanwhile, someone's like, "What's your favorite movie?" And I'm like, "I've never seen a movie or read a book
exactly.
in my life. My brain right. is completely blank.
Can't remember anything." Right.
And the next 6 years, Alex was a celebrity bachelor.
Ooh.
The kindest, calmest, smartest man on camera. Who was apparently the, quote, "f***ing most talking and mother f***ing loving mouth in Hollywood" when he was off camera. Just kidding. That's not a real quote.
That's not a real quote, no.
No one ever said that about him, and he never said it.
No. We assume. I mean, he curses, so Speculation Station, that's what it sounds like when he talks.
He actually did say that at some point.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like he was very lucky in love. Once in 1987, a contestant guessed that flamingos only mate once a year. And Trebek responded, quote, "Correct. Flamingos and I have a great deal in common."
See, it's funny.
I love an intellectual burn on yourself.
Right.
But in 1990, Alex Trebek met the woman who he said was his soulmate, even though she was 24 years younger than him. And we will come back with more right after this.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back to the show, everybody.
So Jean Kirivan was born in 1963 in Green Lawn, New York, to a small, tight-knit Catholic family. She and her older brother Chris and her younger sister Audrey were incredibly close, and this made it really hard for her to leave New York for California to go to Pepperdine University. But she went, and while she was there, tragedy struck the family when her older brother was killed in a car accident. She finished college, but she was still really grief-struck. She didn't know how she would move forward. And she had a job doing bookkeeping for a man in Malibu in 1988. She kind of wondered, you know, do I stay on the West Coast or do I head back east? But then a friend of her boss started coming by regularly. And although he was two decades older than her, she thought he was just so charming and kind and smart. He'd come by the house for lunch, and she would join them. Eventually, they started playing backgammon together. In a blog on guidepost.com, Jean said, quote, "I knew he was on some TV show, but he never said much about it, and I didn't ask."
That's fair.
Like, who wants to talk about work?
Yeah, I don't want to be that guy. Probably everybody asks you about this all the time.
It's probably some boring show on C-SPAN.
Yeah, right. So one day she called her mom back in New York and she said, quote, "I met this nice guy. His name's Alex Trebek." And her mom was like, what? Excuse me? She said, quote, "Don't you know who he is?" She did not.
clearly not, mom. Right. I said it very casually.
Now, Alex eventually did officially ask Jean out. He invited her to a first date dinner at his house. She said that she was so nervous that she was afraid she'd mispronounce her own name. Quote, "But Alex is really down to earth, much more casual than he is on the show." Now, Alex said, you know, the age difference definitely was tough at first. He wrote in his memoirs, quote, "But then I thought, the hell with it. We'll make it work." Jean herself said that she could tell he was a little, wanted to be cautious about that age gap.
Mm-hmm.
So she didn't try to push him about it. They kind of took it one day at a time. And his friend Bob Murphy told People magazine that although he and all his friends had been trying to set Alex up with someone for years, quote, "he was looking for a Jean, and then he found her." And Jean had met a man who helped her find her way out of her grief and realize that, you know, a future could look bright and happy again.
Oh.
Yeah.
On her 26th birthday in 1989, Alex gave Jean a pair of black velvet pants and a matching bolero jacket.
Oh.
You could not be more stylish in 1989
right.
than some black velvet pants and a matching bolero jacket. That's
true.
All I know.
True.
She probably had a nice, like, satin shell top underneath it.
Oh, okay.
Then he said, "Wait. Here's a little something else." And he handed her a little wicker box with a 16-carat sapphire ring surrounded by 6 carats of diamonds.
Yikes.
This sounds insane, and it's also in a wicker box, which
right.
is strange to me. I feel like I'd have my
contrast.
Expectations would be like all over the place. She told People magazine, quote, "It took my breath away. I mean, it was a rock."
Right.
More like a boulder. She continued, quote, "Then he popped the question and I went all dumb. I think I said, what?" Which I love because he clearly popped the answer and
oh,
then she
yeah.
questioned, what? No, of course she said yes. And soon her father, who Alex hadn't met yet, arranged an engagement party for them in New York on a boat just off the coast of Long Island. Alex was only 2 years younger than her dad. And he wrote, quote, "When Jeannie introduced me to him, he took one look at me and said, 'I guess I won't be calling you son.'"
Oh, because we're the same age.
Because we're the same age.
They married on April 30th of 1990. And when the minister said, "Do you, Alex, take Jean to be your wife?" Alex Trebek said, quote, "The answer is yes."
Yes.
Of course. He said he got a big laugh.
Of course.
Memoir, he writes, quote, "That's me always going for the joke."
Oh, yeah. That's what I think of Alex Trebek. First things first, he goes for the joke.
That's one of the things that you learn about in his memoir and mm-hmm. from Jean, though, is that off camera,
He's just a real
jokester all the time.
Oh, that's cool.
I feel like it's a lot of jokes like that, though, you know?
Sure.
Kind of dad jokes.
Yeah, or like really smart jokes.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, oh, no, that was good. There was a thinker.
Remember that joke you told 2 weeks ago? I just got it.
I laughed so loud last night when I finally figured it out.
I was perusing an atlas, and I totally got the joke you told about the Bering Strait.
Oh.
Well, within 3 weeks of their wedding, they learned they were pregnant with their first son, Matthew. They said they knew they were going to have kids, but they weren't expecting that quickly. Mm. But then in 1993, they had a daughter named Emily. And their family also stayed very tight with his adoptive daughter, Nikki. Nikki worked on production in Jeopardy and other shows and movies. She was a model. She was a musician. She did all kinds of stuff. Does all kinds of stuff. She's still around. Nikki said that Alex, who she called dad, took her to a wine symposium in Hawaii where she got to sit next to Vincent Price.
Ooh.
She said, quote, "Needless to say, it was unforgettable."
Yeah.
And on that trip, Alex told Nikki that he was going to propose to Jean. Nikki said, quote, "I could see how happy he was." Nikki herself is only a few years younger than Jean, so the two of them became more like close friends than, you know, stepmother and daughter. So my wife is almost the same age as my daughter, and I'm almost the same age as my wife's father. A weird generational divide there.
Families look like anything, okay?
Hey, there you go.
And some of the best stuff about the Trebeks, as we've been saying, is learning how different he is in his personal life from the Alex Trebek that we see on camera. Mm-hmm. People magazine called him, quote, "a man who keeps his house, better homes and gardens neat, hangs dress shirts on light hangers and sports shirts on dark hangers, and keeps his spice rack alphabetically arranged."
Wow.
But Gene says that while it's his job to be astute, perfect, and articulate on the air, quote, "he certainly doesn't want to be that way at home. People think he goes to bed in a suit. He doesn't. Maybe his birthday suit, right, Gene?"
Maybe he's got like Super Mario pajamas, something real wacky you wouldn't expect.
Oh, I love it. It's like Alex Trebek in his like dinosaur footy pajamas. He's like, "I like to keep it young."
Oh, amazing.
An audience member said on Quora that, quote, "as soon as they said cut, Trebek practically turned into Robin Williams."
Wow.
He started telling jokes and did an imitation of Pacino and Scarface. Then when the director says they're about to come back from commercial, he goes back to being game show host Alex.
Okay.
What impression of Pacino?
I know, right? Like,
sniffing up some shit? Like, what?
"Say hello to my little this." What is friend? That's right. Bang, 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 bang.
Others echoed similar sentiments, calling him silly, a goofball, and a prankster.
Wow.
He apparently loved it when he was parodied by Will Ferrell on SNL or Eugene Levy on SCTV.
Which I learned, I hadn't seen the Eugene Levy one, but I learned that it very similarly was presented Trebek as someone who was very easily frustrated.
Oh, okay.
And got angry and mm-hmm. stuff, kind of like Will Ferrell did, which, of course, is like the antithesis.
I know. I guess Trebek. That is a funny joke, but that's funny they both went the same direction. Mm-hmm. Alex Trebek also had a friendly rivalry with Wheel of Fortune host Pat Sajak. Mm. Several times for April Fool's Day, they would surprise everyone by switching shows without anyone knowing ahead of time.
Oh, my God.
I have to ask anyone, does that include, like, did people show up at Wheel of Fortune for work? And they're like, what's Alex Trebek doing
here? What I read is that it was basically nobody knew.
That's
it was just
awesome.
Between the two of them.
That's hilarious.
Now, Alex and Jean Trebek never really liked the Hollywood life too much. They are both homebodies. Alex liked to drive a pickup truck and do home repairs. She said his garage looked like a, you know, like a tinkerer's workshop. Mm. He was also apparently like tough as nails. Not only did he do the Olympic torch run in 96 from Florida to Atlanta, in 2004, he actually fell asleep behind the wheel of his pickup and he flew 45 feet over an embankment and crashed into a ditch.
Damn.
Unfortunately, no one else was hurt. And Alex himself was back to shooting Jeopardy only 4 days later.
Whoa.
Which, I mean, if I stub my toe, I'm out of work for a week, you know? In 2007, when Alex was 67 years old, he suffered a minor heart attack. His ex-wife, Elaine, was the one who rushed him to the hospital, and she said that she begged him there to retire from Jeopardy. But within a month, he was back shooting the show again. In 2018, he fell and hit his head on the bathtub and had to have surgery to remove blood clots from his brain. Jeez. And once again, right back to work.
Dang.
And then, of course, I would love to not have to get to this, mm-hmm. but we do have to get to the sad part. In 2019, Trebek was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer.
He and Jean had been traveling a lot. They were in Israel when he started having stomach pains, and they were visiting New York when his doctors called, saying they had some concerns. Now, when they caught the cancer, they saw that it had already spread to his stomach. Pancreatic cancer is one of the most dangerous because it spreads very quickly and has no early detection measures.
Yeah.
So Jean said all the feelings of losing her brother rushed back to her. Yeah. She was so worried how Alex would handle it. But she wrote that, quote, right away, he exhibited that same strength he always had. His attitude wasn't, why me? But much more, okay, what do we do? He did not hide the news from his audience, she wrote, but went public right away. And the outpouring of support and love was immediate and overwhelming. Jean points out that most of his fans have known him longer than she has.
Yeah.
So yeah. They, you know, probably felt similarly to her that like somebody really important is very sick right now.
In 2020, they celebrated their 30th anniversary. Trebek wrote in his memoir, quote, she's kept me alive. If it weren't for Jean, I'd have put myself out of this a long time ago.
Jeez.
Because the treatments had been rough sometimes. He was getting chemo once a week, and it started immediately after his diagnosis. And he said that sometimes it was painful, it made him feel really depressed and wonder if it was worth going through. But he wrote, quote, that would have been a massive betrayal of my wife and soulmate, Jean, who had given her all to help me survive. When he wasn't working on the show, they would take walks together when he felt up for it. They would watch TV or they would sit on their swing in the backyard. They're kind of spiritual. And so she said, you know, there's a lot of just being thankful for the sun on your face and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex did continue doing the show, even though sometimes it was hard for him to, you know, concentrate for longer periods of time or to stand for the whole 5-episode tapings. They started to kind of cut that back a little bit. Jean and Alex would watch Jeopardy together. Jean wrote, quote, of course, he knows most of the answers, but he never tells me. That'd be tough, too. I'd be like, no spoilers.
Uh-huh. He's like, I know all the answers. You find the question.
And then in 2019, a contestant named Dhruv Gaur from Gainesville, Georgia, wagered $1,995 out of his $2,000 earnings in Final Jeopardy. And for his question, he wrote, what is We Love You, Alex? When Trebek revealed the response, he choked up. He said, quote, oh, that's very kind. Thank you. But he then caught his composure and said, cost you $1,995, you're left with $5. Jean later said, quote, you could see him like, oh, don't make me cry here, but I love it. I think it meant the world to him.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Alex Trebek continued to host Jeopardy despite his illness. Sam Anderson wrote in New York Times, quote, it was a dignified refusal to surrender to doom. He was the squarest possible existentialist hero, a man who holds the answer to every single trivia question, but not to the great final question of death. And yet he keeps showing up anyway, reading his clues, giving us every last answer he can. Trebek taped his final episode on October 29th of 2020, just over a week before his death on November 8th at 80 years old. He had written in his memoir that, quote, I've got a framed image. Jeannie gave it to me. It's a line from our favorite movie, Wuthering Heights. Whatever our souls are made of, yours and mine are the same. That's the way I look at our relationship. We are one soul in two bodies. On August 19th, 2021, Gene, their two children, Matthew and Emily, and his adopted daughter, Nikki, attended the dedication of the Alex Trebek stage at Sony Pictures Soundstage Studio 10, where Jeopardy is filmed. So they named the stage for him.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. And, you know, he said, one thing they'll never say of me is that I was taken too soon. He said, I did so much, you know.
I guess that's true. 80 is a good run.
Yeah, and a very full
right.
80 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. But it's still sad. I mean, especially someone like that, you have to think, was in people's living rooms like every night that long.
Yeah.
You know, you get attached.
Yeah.
I'm not a religious Jeopardy watcher myself, but I could see a lot of people being like really affected by that.
We watched a lot when I was a kid. Not every night, but we watched a lot. And, you know, even not having watched for, you know, more of my adult life, he's still such an icon. He really does feel like someone you know, because his presence, his image is just so ubiquitous and present all the time.
Yeah. I mean, he hosted Jeopardy my entire life.
Yeah.
So he was like, I mean, everyone knew him. Like, he's just such an icon. Yeah, like you say, a pop culture icon. Everyone knows his name. They know what he sounds like. Mm-hmm. Like, even if you don't watch the show, he was just such a big part of the culture.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, even not watching it, I was like, well, they can't get anyone else to host the show.
No, like, I know,
I don't trust none of y'all.
We mentioned in the last episode, it is different.
I mean,
you know, they're both doing a fine job, but you can't help. But you know, you don't want to compare, but you can't help but be thinking about Trebek all the time.
Right. Which makes me think when he took over for Art Fleming, he must have had a similar, like, even though Art was a host for way less time, obviously, he must have had a similar, like, everybody's got this guy's voice, you know, in their head for this format. And I have to really, like, make it my own.
Yeah.
But he had it for 38 years or whatever. Like,
we were listening to the Weird Al Jeopardy song, which I loved growing up.
Yes.
Ruth Dempsey on our Instagram post pointed out that
that's right.
Weird Al was gave the Jeopardy that bump that
the
helped
Weird
bring
Al
it back.
Because
the Weird Al song references Art Fleming. It was the early 80s, so it was pre-Trebek when it came out. But I never saw Fleming myself.
Mm-mm.
But people did love him. But we all loved Alex Trebek, and we're going to just... clean up all the onions that someone's been cutting in here.
Yeah.
I've got to get this lotion sunscreen out of my eye. But we're going to have some fun when we come back. The Trebeks and the Griffins are certainly not the only love story around Jeopardy. Several couples have met on or around the show. We're going to take a quick look at a few of them right after this break.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area.
Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Welcome back, everyone.
Okay, so Jeopardy ain't all answers and questions. It's also a total trivia tunnel of love.
That's not what I would have thought about it at all.
You can't think of Jeopardy without thinking of getting it on, right?
Getting all hot and bothered.
Well, a blog from Jeopardy's website in 2016 says that at least 7 couples have formed romantic connections on Jeopardy, and then we found at least 2 more since then. The earliest that we could find was actually from the Art Fleming days. In 1978, a man named Carlo Pan was selected to be a contestant on Jeopardy. And like we said, they film several episodes per day, so everybody shows up at the beginning of the day, and you kind of figure out when you're going to go on while you're just sitting in a green room. So he shows up, and a bunch of contestants are already packed into that green room, chatting with each other, telling their stories of how they came to be on the show. And in the middle of the room, there was a woman named Deborah telling her story. She said that she absolutely killed it in her test run to get on the show. She was telling everyone that one of her clues had been, this is the longest song title of ASCAP record. Anybody, I'll give you a second. Anybody know the answer to the question to that one?
Is there a song version of Don't Be a Menace in South Central while drinking your juice in the hood? Or
Well, at least as of 1978, it was, how could you believe me when I said I loved you when you know I've been a liar all my life? That is okay. A Fred Astaire song from the movie Royal Wedding.
Oh.
So there you go. Jane Powell and Fred Astaire.
A little victim blaming.
Well, you knew I was a liar, so it's your fault.
It's your fault.
Well, Deborah was telling everyone in the room how they said she was only the second person in the show's history to answer that question correctly. And then, quote, this tall, skinny man with curly hair and a terrible brown suit put his hand out for me to shake and said, I was the first.
Game.
And it was Carlo. Yep.
Game.
Yep.
Carlo was like, this is the one chance.
It's the best setup I've ever had.
It's not going to come around again. Even if he wasn't interested in Deborah, he's like, allow me.
You don't get a layup better than
exactly,
this.
For real. This is basically scripted. Like, I have to take advantage. In an interview published on mansiononmainstreet.com, Carlo said Deborah had great, bright eyes, quote, with such vitality behind them. But Deborah said, quote, Carlo kept butting in on the conversation. He had something to say about everything. And yet we ended up flirting with each other. Oh, Deborah. She's like, I couldn't resist. But when network reps saw them flirting, they wouldn't let them compete against each other on the same show.
No.
I guess they were like, let's not get in the way of this budding romance.
Yeah, right.
Carlo's turn came first. He lost his episode, but before he left, he slipped Deborah his phone number. Now, she said she didn't think much about it because she was about to go on. Unfortunately, she bombed, but they both live near L.A., so 3 weeks later, she decided to call him up. They spent their first date at old book and record stores, and it turned out they had a ton of the same interests and tastes.
Huh.
They married in 1985, and Carlo said, quote, we hold each other to high standards. God help you if you tell a joke you've told before. Yikes.
They're gonna get cut down.
I feel like that's half of marriage. It's like, oh yeah, I feel like you told me that joke 5 years ago.
I've heard that one, Carlo. You said it 2 weeks ago.
He's like, damn it.
Yeah, well, you weren't listening.
Right, yeah. Can you honestly say you're paying attention? Your eyes glazed over.
Clearly I was. Well, you didn't laugh. Well, it wasn't funny.
Damn, Deborah and Carlo have a hard time. Now, in their 2011 interview, they said they still yell at the TV while they watch Jeopardy together.
Another story, in 1999, Eddie Timonis was the first blind contestant on Jeopardy. When he was only 3 years old, Eddie had to have an operation to remove tumors from his eyes, and that led to permanent blindness. So when he went on Jeopardy, they made some adjustments, like he would get the category names in Braille before each round, and he had a Braille keyboard to type out his response for Final Jeopardy. But he refused any other accommodations. Jeopardy is largely an audio game, really, when it comes down to it.
That's true. I was going to say, I'm not sure he needed that many other accommodations.
Yeah.
But that's cool. He's like, look, just the bare minimum.
Right. And they didn't do any video questions during those games either.
Oh, yeah. I guess they have a video daily double.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Apparently, there's a whole team that just makes video Jeopardy questions. They go all over the world.
That's cool. What an interesting job.
I know, right? Sign me up. Well, Eddie won 5 games in a row, which at the time and up until 2003 was the limit on the number of games you could win. So once you win 5, you retire undefeated.
I never knew they had a limit.
Yeah.
And now it's like, how long can you hold on?
Yeah, well, they love these streaks now, right? Because everybody tunes in to see, oh, when's the champ going to lose?
Yeah.
So later, Eddie ended up in a Yahoo message group about game shows, where a high school social studies teacher named Kelly asked him for some ideas on integrating game shows into her teaching curriculum, which to me sounds like she just wanted to talk to this guy, right? Like, I don't know, how could I put game shows in my classroom?
I mean, she might also be a conscientious teacher trying to mold the minds of tomorrow.
Sure.
But yeah, maybe she's like, what can I ask this undefeated champion of Jeopardy?
She did say that her mom had nudged her to get to know him.
Oh, okay.
After his time on the show.
Good old mom.
So hard to say if she was like seeking him out.
She's a wing mom.
Right?
Guys get wingmen. Ladies get wing moms.
Wing moms. Well, Eddie must have had some good ideas for her because later he said she, quote, sent me a note thanking me for helping her fill the last few minutes of her class, and things progressed from there. Mm. Now, they didn't live near each other. She was like in North Carolina. He was in Virginia. But she had a friend who lived near where he did, and she would go visit her and manage to meet up with Eddie while she was there, which, again, feels to me like, oh, I'm just in town. What do you know? I happen to be close to you.
She's working hard on this.
Right. She wrote to an old high school person she hadn't seen in 20 years. It was like, I need to come visit you.
Okay. And they're like, who is this again? You remember me? I sat next to you on the bus.
Well, Eddie said, quote, it was a lovely walk. I had the sensation that I had just found the one. It would seem she concurred. When I met her parents, her dad told me they kind of knew me already since they'd watched me on TV so many times.
He was like, surprise, bitch, I'm completely different.
Just I like, cursed like a sailor, yeah.
Another couple is two women who actually did compete against each other. Emily and Stacy Cloyd first met in 2009 at an in-person audition for Jeopardy. In an article on Insider by Annetta Constantinidis, Emily said she'd grown up watching the show every night with her parents and joined the Quiz Bowl team in high school. She never really thought she'd compete, but when auditions came to D.C., she figured, I'll give it a shot. And at the audition, there was a coordinator who held icebreakers to help everyone relax. And they asked, quote, who came furthest for the audition? A girl raised her hand, introduced herself as Stacy, and said she'd just graduated from University of Michigan and was moving to D.C. to work for a nonprofit legal clinic. Emily is like, whoa, hey, I actually just graduated from Michigan and moved to D.C. to work as a climate scientist. And Stacy's like, whoa, crazy. But they didn't see each other again for 8 months.
They both got called to go on Jeopardy and they both flew to Los Angeles. And we kind of described this before, but when you show up for the day, you don't know when you're going to compete or against whom. Mm-hmm. Emily's the one who told us, quote, just before each game, the staff draw the names of two contestants who will go up against the returning champion. Mm. Which, to me, learning that the returning champion plays all their games in a row.
Yes.
That's really intense. So not only have you, now I've won 2, 3, 4 games, I've got more to film each day. And then I got to come back tomorrow and shoot 5 in a row. Like Ken Jennings.
Yeah.
Who won 74 games. What is that, like 15 days straight of answering trivia?
Do you think it's better, like, you're in the zone right? Or like,
maybe.
Oh, I wish a couple months went by, I could read some more books.
Or at least like, or come back tomorrow, like, get some rest.
Right? Yeah, your brain's just like, I don't know anymore. Yeah. My brain is fried.
It's so weird because we see it day to day. You assume there's 24 hours in between these competitions.
Yeah, but no, they're like, we're going to take a 20-minute break, get some water, and come on back.
Mm-hmm. Well, after three games were filmed that day, they drew Emily's name to compete. And then the next name they pulled, of course, was Stacy's. Mm-hmm. The two of them reintroduced themselves. It had been 8 months. They didn't really remember each other's names. And then they went head to head. By the end of Double Jeopardy, going into the final round, Emily was in third place with only $400. The returning champion had $1,000. But Stacy was rocking $15,000.
Nice.
Now, of course, you know that it's anybody's game in Final Jeopardy, but true, that was a tough score to beat because all Stacy had to do was not wager a high enough amount that she could lose, you know, more than the other two could win, because you can't bet more than you have.
I was about to ask, unless like the returning champion was like, I'm going to bet 16 grand,
but he can't.
They're like, you don't have it.
Right. He's only got 1,000. So the max he could win is 2,000. So as long as Stacy didn't lose more than, you know, $13,000, then she was fine.
Yeah.
So, of course, she won, had that game locked up tight, and Emily lost. But since they both lived in D.C., they decided they would have a viewing party of their episode together when it aired in March of 2010.
By that fall, they were finally dating. Even though they both went to University of Michigan and both lived in D.C., they told Jeopardy that it's really unlikely they would have met if it weren't for the show.
Yeah.
Emily told Insider that some of her friends had to apologize for saying mean things about Stacy while they were competing on the show. But that's ride or die friends,
yeah,
all right?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Stacy was probably like, no, you got to talk shit about me.
Yeah.
I was 15,000 in the lead. So.
You should hear what my friend said about you.
I know, right? They were like, that $400, whatever.
The returning champ, his friends probably said some terrible things.
I know, but he's like, I didn't have to disclose what they said.
We're not dating.
We had no romance. On their first Valentine's Day together, Jeopardy aired the episode where Ken Jennings competed against the IBM computer Watson, which Emily said, quote, was pretty special since it turned out Watson had actually trained on our game.
Oh, wow.
So that's cute. It was like a Valentine's Day gift to them from Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Emily and Stacy married 2 years later on June 10th of 2012, and they said that they think Jeopardy is hugely important because, quote, knowledge and expertise and truth are taking a beating these days, but on Jeopardy, they're respected and celebrated. Seeing that people could win for being smart, or at least good at trivia, was important for a kid who preferred reading books to playing sports.
Mm.
And when they tell their story and people ask them, who won? Emily likes to say, quote, Stacy won the game, but I won at life.
Aww. Very cute.
Cute.
Now, there's a bunch of other couples with similar stories. Some of them, you know, fascinating. And some of them are just like, yeah, we were both on Jeopardy. We met. We started dating. We got married. All right. Good for you.
Oh, wow. You really painted a picture for me.
But look, I mean, you put a bunch of nerds in a room together. It's going to happen sooner or later, right?
I was actually good. I was thinking, because earlier I'm like, well, I don't think of Jeopardy as a place to meet somebody.
Uh-huh.
But like every place where you're in a room with people who share at least one interest with you is a possible place to meet people, at least to be friends. Like, you know, you have something in common.
Well, and learning that they've got, okay, so the five games a day, you know, between 10 and 15 people back sitting in the green room all day.
Right.
You know,
plenty
probably a lot of them are sitting there reading a book, but there's going to be some social interaction.
Yeah.
So, yeah, lots of chances.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if only Maya Bialik and Ken Jennings would get together, that'd really put a nice button on this episode. So if y'all could just do that, come back with a part three.
The rival hosts become romance hosts.
No, probably not, because Ken Jennings has been married to his wife since the year 2000.
Oh.
And then I found out that Maya Bialik's current boyfriend is apparently a writer, poet, filmmaker, and futurist.
Oh.
And I guess apparently the two of them host a podcast together. So actually, maybe we can get them on the show because that could be a ridiculous romance right there.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Blossom.
How did Maya Bialik and her futurist boyfriend get together?
Did you watch Blossom? You didn't watch Blossom, did you?
No, I didn't. I know about the hats, but that's about it.
I watched it because I was in love with Six.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 40% because her name was Six. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. Like, her name is a number? What?
But, like, if someone's name is four.
Not as cool.
It doesn't work. Sorry. It's like the X sound, I feel.
Yeah.
Does a lot for helps. Six.
Right. Right.
Because, yeah, I don't. But I'm not thinking of other numbers that work for me as a name.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Seven. That sounds like a serial killer.
Seven.
I just think of, ugh, Kevin Spacey. That's no good.
Ooh, head in a box. True.
Nine. Not doing it
I
for
guess
me.
I have a friend named Trey, because he's the third.
Oh, yeah. Trey's great.
Trey.
Yeah.
So that's it. But he's not called three. You
right.
know, that's. Trey Although, feels like a cooler way to do it.
Three on Ozark.
Oh, yeah, three. Yeah. That's right. That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And I don't know why it worked for me on Ozark. I was like, sure. He looks
right,
like
Right, but I didn't find him sexy.
No.
No.
That's true.
By
I
design.
Mean, he was definitely a child, so I'm glad to hear that.
Exactly. Well, we better
I'm
get out of here before
glad to hear that.
Before the Canadian Broadcasting Company cancels us.
Shuts us down. They're like, too salacious.
Wow. Well, that's, that's your Jeopardy love stories.
That's the trivia of Jeopardy love stories.
Uh-huh. You can look up more. There's a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, these were the most, these are the ones that really stood out to me.
Yeah, those are cute.
And last I could find, you know, not a lot of up-to-the-date information on them, but it seems like they've all lived happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
And it was nice to kind of get to dig through Alex and Jean's life, too.
Yeah, I never knew that about, and I didn't really know much about Alex Trebek at all.
No.
Until, of course, he's sick and people were doing a lot of retrospectives about his life.
Right, sure, sure.
And stuff like that. I remember being like, oh, there's, you know, he's a really interesting guy, but he just was, he's like, he was famous before people were on Instagram all the time.
Yeah.
Inviting you into their home.
Right.
And stuff. So you just had basically just what he was on Jeopardy for a very long time. You didn't get that kind of insider look at someone's personality the way you do now.
I really liked this interview I read with Will Smith a few years back that he said, you know, when I was becoming a movie star, it was all about hiding from your audience. You couldn't put movies out too often. You couldn't be out there in the press too much because you wanted this air of like, where's he been? Oh, he's here. Let's go see his movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was about sort of restricting people's access to you. And he said, then there was this turn with social media where now it's more like, if you want to be a movie star, you've got to let people into your home and see what your day-to-day life, you know, curated though it may be.
Right.
And now I can't help but think how much better Will Smith might be doing right now if people didn't get to see so much of what he was doing.
I mean, literally, one of the best headlines ever is, we should all know less about each other.
Yes.
And I kind of agree.
Agreed.
There's parts of it that are great and very humanizing and so on. But yeah, it's just, a lot of it is like, okay, maybe you should just learn how to not talk about everything in your life and say every word that comes to your head because it's not doing you any favors.
If we could only all be more like Alex Trebek.
That's right.
In so many ways.
In so many ways.
Yeah.
Well, this was really fun to learn about these Jeopardy folks. I hope that y'all enjoyed this too. One of the finest game shows ever.
True.
Still going strong. And the thing about trivia is they keep making more of it. There's
True.
Always something
True.
Else.
Facts keep happening.
They just keep coming as much as I keep saying, please stop.
Right.
Let us know what you thought. Reach out with your own suggestions. Tell us if you were on Jeopardy. I think we asked this last time.
Yeah.
But if you're on Jeopardy, tell us your experience, especially if you got to meet Alex Trebek. If he told you a joke or if he cursed at you, I want to hear about it. You can find us through email, RidickRomance@gmail.com.
Right. Or find us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Oh Great, It's Eli.
I'm at Dynamite Boom.
And the show is at RidickRomance.
That's right. And we will be back soon with another fun-filled episode about these some crazy love stories.
That's right. We'll catch you the next one.
Love you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So long, friends. It's time to go. Thanks for listening to our show. Tell your friends, neighbors, uncles, and aunts to listen to our show, Ridiculous Romance.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.